Here is an excerpt made on October 19th by Gord Hill from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation, founder of Warrior Publication and the No 2010 website, in a discussion about the Olympics on unceded indigenous lands hosted by UBC Green College. Here he talks about the history of colonialism and its current continual effects in and around Canada, and particularly in the context of the 2010 Games.
By the 1850s, they had established BC as a colony. And the first colonial government of the province was, does anybody know? The first colonial government of the colony was formed by?
James Dedis.
He was the first governor. Now who did he work for? The Hudson's Bay Company. The Hudson's Bay Company was the first colonial government of the province here. And if you look at the history of colonialism in North America and around the world during this time period, it was actually the corporations that led the invasion and occupation of the Americas. You look at Virginia, it was established by the Virginia Company. All those colonies were established by corporations, and that's the same thing that happened here in the province. The Hudson's Bay Company formed the first government. James Douglas was the chief factor of the Hudson's Bay Company here in the colony, and he became the first governor of the province. So this history of corporations and colonialism, it goes back a long ways, right? It's not just a new phenomenon that we're facing here today with the expansion of corporate power. But anyway, so James Douglas becomes the first, basically the first governor of the province. And what he did was he went out on Vancouver Island, that's where they were set up, and he went out around Fort Victoria, around Nanaimo, and on North Vancouver Island, around what would be Fort Rupert, and he negotiated a number of treaties with the indigenous tribes of the area, and they became known as the Douglas Treaties, and there are about a dozen of these treaties. They cover very small parcels of land, which were where the, they were just setting up their little forts or whatever, and the 358 square kilometers of land, which they acquired through these treaty negotiations. They gave money and other material to the tribes in compensation for using this land. And Douglas, at the time, was following what is British law. He was following the dictates of the Royal Proclamation. And then what happened after that? By 1860, they stopped the process of making any treaties, and they simply began to impose the colonial regime on indigenous peoples. And this process continued on up until 1871, British Columbia joined the Confederation of Canada. And this was a very important addition to Canada because now the whole colony went from coast to coast, from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast. And BC, now being a part of the Confederation, in 1875, the colonial government here in the province passed the BC Lands Act, and the purpose of this Lands Act was to open up more land for settlement. So it was an act to create a method by which settlers could come in and purchase land and begin intensifying the settlement of the land here. So that was in 1875. That same year, the federal government issued what's called a duty of disallowance, striking down the BC Lands Act, saying that it was against the law. Why? Because the province had failed to negotiate treaties for the land of the province here. And so what the BC did was they threatened to withdraw from Confederation. And the next year, in 1876, the federal government passed the Indian Act, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, which imposed federal control over all indigenous peoples in the country, and established the reserve system, the status system, and the band council system, which are vital to their power and control over indigenous peoples, because these are the methods by which colonialism was entrenched and expanded here in the country, but particularly here in the province, because up until that point, the government had absolutely no jurisdiction over indigenous peoples. They had failed to negotiate treaties. So with the imposition of the Indian Act, the government assumed and imposed control over indigenous peoples, although they lacked the legal means by which to do so, because they had not negotiated any treaties. And this is why you have today the modern day treaty process, because the land here, and this is what indigenous peoples were saying over 100 years ago in the province here, they're saying this land is stolen, you have no jurisdiction, You're not abiding by your own laws. And this is the same message we carry today. And if you look at the indigenous resistance in this province since the 1970s, when we had a resurgence of grassroots movements here, you look at the struggle and you'll see the same message. Because indigenous people are saying we're sovereign people. You have no jurisdiction. Your province of BC is an illegitimate political entity which lacks the legal and moral authority to govern. And that is our position as indigenous peoples. Our sovereignty movement, that is our political position. All the struggles that have been engaged by indigenous peoples will say the same thing. As you've seen in Loretta's presentation, she's talking about rights and title of indigenous peoples, because this is an unresolved question in the province. And we're bringing it up in relation to the Olympic industry, because we know the Olympics, the corporations and the government want to use the Olympic leverage, as they themselves refer to it as. They want to use this Olympic leverage to expand corporate resource exploitation in the province. And ever since the Liberal government got into power, they have greatly expanded these industries, the mining industry, oil and gas, tourism, these types of industries which take place on indigenous lands and which impact indigenous peoples. And if you look at the whole Olympic industry and where it networks out into, one of them is the tar sands in northern Alberta, which is basically an industry that's causing genocide up there against indigenous peoples, who their land is being contaminated, their water is contaminated, they have all kinds of cancer that they never had in their community before because of this tar sands project, which is a massive, one of the world's largest environmental catastrophes occurring in this country. And a lot of the corporations involved, the sponsors of the Olympics, are involved in the tar sands, including the Royal Bank of Canada, which is one of the main sponsors of the Olympics, and the Torch Relay. They're one of the main financiers of the tar sands project. And you can see how they're trying to deal with the potential indigenous opposition by hiring Phil Fontaine, the former head of the Assembly of First Nations, which we always said were a bunch of collaborators, because from my opinion and of others, the Indian Act band councils are nothing more than collaborators with the government, and they serve to legalize the corporate exploitation of our lands. And and for Phil Fontaine to take that position should really be an eye-opener to people who think the band councils or the Assembly of First Nations represents First Nations people, because they do not. Because you can see where Phil Fontaine's real loyalties lie. As soon as he leaves the AFN, he signs up with the Royal Bank of Canada. Now he's going to go around and justify and explain and rationalize the genocide that's been committed against indigenous peoples in northern Alberta. Now here in the province, we have this unresolved land question, and we are going to advance our struggle, and we're going to raise people's consciousness about this. And this is why we have adopted the slogan, No Olympics on Stolen Native Land, to highlight this issue. Because this colonialism is not some historical event that happened 100 years ago. It's going on today. The impacts of it are, you can see in the downtown east side here, where 30% of the population down there is estimated to be indigenous peoples, yet we're only 5% of the population. The most marginalized, impoverished, oppressed community probably in this country is the downtown east side, where you have a lot of indigenous peoples. Indigenous peoples comprising over 30% of the homeless people in this city. I could go on and on. You know, Canada goes around the world preaching that it's a champion of human rights and it respects human rights and civil rights. When you look at just the recent history of indigenous peoples here, you know, our elder Harriet Nahaney, she died as a result of her imprisonment because she's standing up to defend the land. And her position was based on the 1763 Royal Proclamation. That's why she went to jail. That's why she died. She died resisting the Olympic industry. We've got the cases of Frank Paul here, a homeless indigenous man, dragged out into an alley on a cold, wet, rainy night and left to die. We got the Kyle Tate, a youth who was shot and killed by the police. We have all kinds of other cases here of the police killing indigenous peoples, ongoing violence against indigenous peoples. We have over 70 missing and murdered, mostly Native women here from the downtown east side of Vancouver. Up in northern BC, the Highway of Tears, over 30 missing Indigenous women across the country, more than 500 missing and murdered Indigenous women. And the government wants to say, it's all great here. We have a great relationship with Indigenous peoples. We're saying, no, that's false. That's a lie that the government, the corporations, and the Olympics are perpetrating. The four host First Nations are collaborators in this lie and this cover-up, saying that they're working for the betterment of Indigenous peoples. How can they possibly even say that? And you look at the facts, and you look at the recent things. They say, oh, this is for the benefit of Indigenous peoples. There's going to be all kinds of economic benefits. Just look at the Cowichan sweater incident. You know, the Cowichan sweater, it's made by the people on Duncan, the Cowichans on Vancouver Island. That's a design that they made, that sweater. And the Hudson's Bay Company, they take that and they get another company to make them. Not even the Indigenous peoples. Like, what kind of, what kind of benefit is that for a Native people? Well, we'd say it's not a benefit. It's just another example of theft and exploitation of Indigenous culture. They love Indigenous culture. They love everything about Indigenous culture. The land, the artwork, the carvings. They love everything about Indigenous peoples, except the people. You know? They don't show us any love. They talk about the rule of law. If we follow the laws, we follow the negotiations and the legal route, then we'll get the fruits of that. Well, we don't see anything here. 150 years of colonialism in this province, through the negotiations, attempted negotiations from our so-called leaders, have achieved nothing. So with that, I would say thank you for coming, and I don't know if there's any questions here. No Olympics on stolen native land. In the spirit of Harriet Nehaney, Gila Kessler.
Out there that are listening to this interview, buy shirts that says no Olympics on Native stolen land, and get out there and start kicking Gordon Campbell's ass back to where he's from. That's all I like to say, but my name is Rick, and my Indian name is Circle Needle.
Marches while blows up. By the Vanrad Collective, check out ncra.ca under the series Travel Against Canada and radioforall.net under the series Out of Control.
The interview with Melissa Elliott was made by Antiwar at Laurier. It's available at rebel.ca. The speech from Gord Hill was recorded by Don Polly from the Dominion. It's available at Vancouver Media Corp.